What profit hath he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth? I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of man to be exercised in it. He hath made everything beautiful in his time. Also he hath set the world in their heart, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. I know that there is no good in them, but for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life. And also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it, and God doeth it that men should fear before him. Now we know Solomon was a very wise man. If we read through his different writings, we know he understood a lot about how life works. He understood that we're given responsibilities, we're given a purpose in life, but he also knows that only God saw the whole scope of things, and ultimately that God is in control of today and of the future. I want to look some at wisdom today, man's wisdom and God's wisdom. We know the account of God giving Solomon wisdom. I'm just going to turn briefly to 1 Kings. I'm going to look at a fair bit of scripture today. 1 Kings chapter 3, verses 13 through 15. And Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of David his father, only he sacrificed and burned incense in high places. And the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place. 1,000 burnt offerings did Solomon offer upon that altar. In Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, "Ask what I shall give thee." That's an interesting dream. And Solomon said, "Thou hast showed unto thy servant David my father great mercy, according as he walked before thee in truth and in righteousness and in uprightness of heart with thee, and thou hast kept for him this great kindness, that thou hast given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. And now, O Lord my God, thou hast made thy servant king instead of David my father, and I am but a little child. I know not how to go in or come out." Go out or come in. "And thy servant is in the midst of thy people which thou hast chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge this day so great a people?" And the speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. And God said unto him, "Because thou askest this thing, and hast not asked for thyself long life, neither hast asked riches for thyself, nor hast asked the life of thine enemies, but hast asked for thyself understanding to discern judgment. Behold, I have done according to thy words. Lo, I have given thee a wise and understanding heart, so that there was none like thee before thee, neither after thee shall any arise like unto thee. And I have also given thee that which thou hast not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be any among the kings like unto thee all thy days. And if thou wilt walk in my ways, to keep my statutes and my commandments, as thy father David did walk, then will I lengthen thy days." So we see in verse 7 and 8, Solomon is humble enough as a new king to recognize that the task before him is much bigger than he can handle on his own. He said he feels like a little child. He feels like he's very inexperienced, really has no idea how to go about this, and he's humble enough to ask God for wisdom. And verse 9 says, not just wisdom for his own benefit, but wisdom so he would be able to lead the people that he has been made responsible for. And we read that God acknowledges the request, it's a worthy request, and it pleases God that he asks this rather unselfish request here. What's interesting then is that God also gave him riches and honor and a long life as well. And why God gave one man seemingly everything isn't totally clear to me. If we look at Solomon's life, we see that even everything still wasn't enough. We'll look more at that later. And I don't know, maybe that's the lesson God wants us to see in Solomon's life, that a person can have everything under the sun, as Solomon says, and it still does not bring satisfaction. But that's not quite the point here. If we would keep reading in 1 Kings, we would see that Solomon was almost immediately given a chance to exercise his newly acquired wisdom in the well-known account of the two mothers that brought the baby and discerning which mother was the real mother of the living baby. And we know the results there. We know that Solomon became famous for his wisdom. People traveled from far and wide just to hear him speak. Now, I don't know if that's a goal of yours or not, to have crowds come just to hear your wisdom. But Solomon, apparently, it'd be interesting to just hear him talk. What did he have to say that was so attractive to these people, so different that people came? But they did. They heard him. They came to hear him. So did Solomon exercise godly wisdom through his life or simply man's wisdom? We ask what's the difference? And for those of you that do come on a regular basis, you know that I'm working my way through James. And if we want to turn to James chapter 3, verses 13 through 18, we have this short passage on wisdom that I kind of am using today as a springboard, possibly, to try and just simply scratch the surface of what God says, the Bible says about wisdom. And James gives a very brief look at two kinds of wisdom. So James chapter 3, verses 13, James asks, "Who is a wise man and doeth knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and strife in your heart, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descends not from above, but is earthly, sensual, and devilish. For where envy and strife is, there is confusion in every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace." So we might first ask, well, what is wisdom? That's always a question we look at. And for me to even attempt to, you know, study or explain what all wisdom includes is almost humorous. Those of us as parents, we've all heard young children discussing among themselves a subject that is quite above their understanding. And it's sometimes amusing to hear them explain, often to a younger sibling, something that they feel they're an expert on, but to us, their understanding is quite simple. And that's how I feel about wisdom this morning. So maybe you can learn with me, and we'll go from here. Wisdom is more than just knowledge. Now, knowledge is necessary to have wisdom, but knowledge alone cannot make one wise. And I think if we've been through life at all, we know what that looks like. A person who is very smart, knows a lot of things, but isn't overly wise. In the Bible, the word understanding is sometimes used interchangeably with wisdom, but I believe wisdom goes even a step beyond understanding in our language today. Wisdom not only understands knowledge, but is then able to skillfully apply that knowledge to situations in life as they arise. In verse 13 here in James, it suggests that a truly wise man will show his wisdom in his everyday life, his conversation as it's used here. Conversation, as we know in the King James, means yes, the words we speak, but also the life that we live as well. And that is where his wisdom comes out, is his everyday life. A wise person goes through his day-to-day duties and his choices, his actions, and his reactions show his true wisdom. And James says here, with meekness. This wisdom is shown with humility, with gentleness, with a quiet authority. You don't have to prove that you're wise. True wisdom proves itself, and it's often somewhat silent. It's often the person who's not saying something that sometimes has the better answer. Verse 14 says, glory not. The New Living Translation says, don't cover the truth with lying or boasting. Maybe sometimes it seems like we have all the answers, but no one comes asking the questions. And if that's the case, maybe that's a sign that you're not quite as wise as you think you might be. So verse 14 to 16 kind of inserts a description of man's wisdom in between here. It says it's earthly, sensual, devilish. It does not come from God. And verse 13, 17, 18 describes godly wisdom, pure, peaceable, gentle, and those there. So what is man's wisdom? Man's versus God's wisdom? Is man's wisdom really wisdom? If we use the description of skillfully applying an understanding of knowledge to everyday situations, then yes, man's wisdom is wisdom in a sense. What are some examples of that? Well, we might say someone is clever. They can figure things out. Maybe they're very good at reading people. And Solomon's first example of wisdom with the two ladies might be called that. They came to him arguing whose baby it was, what to do about it. And his solution was to offer to cut the living baby in half to determine who the real mother was. And his little bluff worked. The real mother, or the reactions of the two mothers revealed which one was lying, which one was telling the truth, and the problem was solved. It was great insight there. But I have to ask myself, was that godly wisdom or man's wisdom? And maybe to answer that, can you picture Jesus handling that situation the same way Solomon did? Would that have been his solution? Say, well, let's cut the one in half here and see what goes from there. I don't know. Maybe. It doesn't quite seem like Jesus' nature to do that. So I'll leave that there. But that's an example. We might see someone today who's very wise in business. This is probably one of the bigger areas that we see man's wisdom today. Wise in business. He or she has great insight in how to make money come from just seemingly nowhere. You know, we've seen those people. I read a book once where the author modeled his life after his friend's father and how the father ran the business. And the author learned, you know, how far he could take a situation, how far he could go with the risk without being burned. And he had a great eye for analyzing a situation and seeing how he could gain from that. And he was very good at it, had natural talent with, in seeing that. And with the teaching, he went far beyond what he learned and became very successful financially. And it was a very interesting book. It was challenging in a lot of ways, but it also was strictly man's wisdom. Some of his practices and stuff were not godly. And like Solomon, this man did or will eventually die and leave everything he gained to somebody else. Another example, maybe someone is a great leader. He or she is great at motivating people. They understand what makes each person tick, and they use that knowledge, and here again, this is understanding coupled with knowledge. It's the definition of wisdom. They use that to bring out the best in every team member, and they're very good at what they do. Maybe they have a special gift of listening in such a way that makes you feel very special. You talk to them, and you just want to open yourself up to them. That's their gift. And none of these necessarily wrong. God's gift of wisdom to Solomon, I believe, included many of these talents and even more. But the question is, how did Solomon use this wisdom? For God or for himself? Solomon wrote the book of Ecclesiastes towards the end of his life, Proverbs towards the beginning, Ecclesiastes towards the end. And it's sort of a time of looking back and reflecting on his life. And at the risk of taking a little too much time, I want to read the first two chapters of Ecclesiastes with just a few comments thrown in, but mostly just to let these words speak for themselves. Ecclesiastes chapter 1. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit hath a man of all the labor which he taketh under the sun? So he starts off, all is vanity. You look up the word vanity, empty, useless. And this coming from a man at the end of his life who had pretty much everything. Verse 4, one generation passeth away, and another generation cometh, but the world abideth forever. The sun also arises, and sun goeth down, hasteth to the place where he arose. The wind goeth towards the south, and turneth about unto the north. It whirleth about continually, and the wind returneth again according to his circuits. Everything just goes around and around day after day. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full, unto the place from whence the rivers come. Thither they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be. And that which is done is that which shall be done, and there is no new thing under the sun. Is there anything whereof it shall be said, see, this is new? It hath been already of old time, which was before us. There is no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of things that are to come with those that shall be after. I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I gave my heart to seek and to search out wisdom concerning all things that were done in heaven. This sore travail, or New Living says, this tragic existence that God has given to the sons of man to be exercised therewith. So Solomon's goal was to seek out wisdom, was to know wisdom. He says that here. I have seen all the works that were done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. He uses the word vanity a lot in this passage. That which is crooked cannot be made straight. That which was wanting cannot be numbered. I commune with mine own heart, saying, lo, I am come to great estate, and I have gotten more wisdom than all they that were before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart has great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is vexation of spirit. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increases knowledge increases sorrow. And we see here that more knowledge simply brings more responsibility, more burden, more awareness. Chapter 2, I said in my heart, go to now, I will prove thee with mirth, therefore enjoy pleasure. Behold, this also is vanity. So here in chapter 2, we have a list of things that Solomon attempted that he did in an attempt to find meaning and purpose in life. So verse 1, he tried pleasure. That's only good for about so long. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting mine heart with wisdom and to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the sons of man, which they should do under the heavens all the days of their life. So he tried wine, he tried different things like that, still didn't do it for him. Verse 4, I made me great works, I builded me houses, I planted me vineyards. And we know that that is something that is even common today. Let's make something that we're proud of. He tried that, didn't work either. Verse 5, I made me gardens and orchards, I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruits. I made me pools of water to water wherewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens, and had servants born in my house. Also had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. So he had just loads and loads of things. I know the history tells us that some of the things he built were just simply astounding. Even that didn't satisfy. Verse 8, I gathered me also silver and gold, and peculiar treasure of kings and of the provinces. I get me men singers and women singers, and delights of the sons of men, as musical instruments and all of that sort. So he had access to whatever he wanted. He tried music. Maybe music will bring it. All kinds of music, and probably plenty of talent there as well. Verse 9, so I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoices in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. So he got what he wanted. And there is a sense of satisfaction in working for something and getting what that brings. But Solomon said, even in getting all that he wanted, this was still empty. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. So all that he did, all he got, it was still meaningless. And I turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that cometh after the king, even that which has already been done? Now he can't do anything more than what's been done already. Then I saw that wisdom excels folly as far as light excels darkness. So he did recognize that wisdom is still better than this foolishness that he was chasing after. He did acknowledge that. Verse 14, the wise man's eyes are in his head, but a fool walketh in darkness. And I perceived also that one event happened to them all, and that is death, obviously. So he said, well, yes, even though wisdom is better than foolishness, at the end of life, both the wise and the foolish will die. Then I said in my heart, as it happened to the fool, so happened even to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart, this also is vanity. For there is no remembrance of the wise man more than of the fool forever. Seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man as the fool? Both are forgotten. Yes, the wise man is often remembered longer than the foolish person. But how many of you remember your great, great grandparents and what they accomplished in life? Anybody? Nobody. So were they wise or foolish? Don't remember. It's gone. They're both forgotten. Therefore I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me, for it is all vanity and vexation of spirit. So he's feeling a frustration here. All he's doing, all he's trying, is simply not bringing satisfaction to him. And verse 18, yea, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that should be after me. Everything he's doing, someone else is going to inherit, someone else is going to enjoy, and that bothered him as well. Verse 19, and who knoweth whether he be a wise man or a fool? Yet shall he have rule over all my labor wherein I have labored, and wherein I showed myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. So maybe his son or grandson, whoever, won't be as wise as him, won't make good decisions, is going to squander all that Solomon has spent all his life working towards. Verse 20, therefore I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and in equity. Yet to a man that hath not labored therein shall he leave it for his portion. There again, talking about passing it on. This also is vanity and great evil. For what hath a man of all his labor and of the vexation of his heart, wherein he hath labored under the sun? For all his days are sorrows and his travail grief, yet his heart taketh not rest in the night. This also is vanity. He's saying, well, what's man's reward for all this? Sorrow, pain, and grief. And goes on, verse 24. There is nothing better for a man than that he should simply eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw it was from the hand of God. So he's saying, simply enjoy today. You do all this, it means nothing. Eat and drink and enjoy today. For who can eat, and who else can hasten there hereunto more than I? For God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy, but to the sinner he giveth travail to gather and to heap up, that he may give to him that is good before God. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit. And this brings us to the passage we read earlier. But what a depressing couple of chapters. The first two chapters of Ecclesiastes there. And this being written, this coming from a man who was extremely blessed by God, both in earthly and in spiritual blessings, probably the wisest and certainly the richest man of his day that lived there. And this is the joy that man's wisdom produces. I think we would all agree that Solomon was very full of what we might say man's wisdom, a good businessman, a good leader. But this is what it brought out to him. It's not all negative. If we read through here, you know, scattered through his grumblings, there's small tidbits here and there of true wisdom. But overall, I think we'd agree that when he wrote this, Solomon was very dissatisfied with his life. Now, I personally think his expectations were simply too high. I think he expected that with all he had, his life should be pretty near perfect. And the reality is that he and us still live in a fallen world. And I think Solomon was in his own way trying to build his own heaven here on earth. Now, this is just my speculation here. But I can kind of understand his reasoning. You know, I'm the wisest man around, and I'm doing all this stuff right. And there's no reason that with my planning, these things shouldn't work together perfectly. And I would have a wonderful, satisfied life. But we know that's not how life works here. That's not how it works for any of us. And if it didn't work for the wisest man that ever lived, it's not going to work that way for us either. It might for a while, but at some point, everyone who chooses Solomon's way ends up with his response to life. It's all just rather meaningless. And in contrast, if we go back to James, we see in verse 17, the wisdom that is above, or godly wisdom, is pure, it's peaceable, gentle, it yields to others, it shows mercy and good deeds, it doesn't show favoritism, and it isn't hypocritical. And this gives us a much different feeling than we just got from reading all of Solomon's accomplishments here. How does one get heavenly wisdom? Job talks about finding wisdom in Job chapter 28. And I'm not going to read that, but if we look through the first number of verses, we know Job was a very wealthy man twice, but Job looked at his wealth with a much different attitude than Solomon. I don't think he looked to his possessions to bring him satisfaction the way that Solomon did. And his response after God allowed Satan to wipe out his possessions, including his family, was, "The Lord gave and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." That was Job's testimony. And he certainly was one of the richest men of his day as well. Job was, as well as probably one of the wiser ones too. And in chapter 28, the first 11 verses, Job talks about mining. Now, it's kind of hard to discern that in the King James, but if you read some other translations, it's much more clear. Mining silver, gold, iron, brass, and other precious metals and minerals and stuff. And he gives a very detailed description of the process of mining. And he's describing digging deep tunnels, descending with ropes and lights, and down below the earth's surface and extracting the valuables that are down there that are just hidden from normal view. And it's kind of interesting to imagine how advanced they might have been with some of this technology back in their day. They certainly, I don't know how they determined that gold was down there, but they went digging for it, and they did it the hard way. But in verse 12, he says, "Men can find all these valuable resources, but where can one find true wisdom?" Verse 12, "But where shall wisdom be found, and where is the place of understanding? How is it attained? There's not a price tag attached to it. There's not enough money in the world to buy it." Solomon found that out. In verse 23, "God understandeth the way thereof, and he knoweth the place thereof." Speaking of wisdom, only God knows where to find true wisdom. God sees and knows everything. And the conclusion in verse 28, "And unto man he said, Behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom, and to depart from evil is understanding." True wisdom can only come from the fear of God. And if we look at Solomon's life again, he echoes this in the first chapter of Proverbs, when he opens the book of Proverbs. And I'm going to read the first 7 verses of Proverbs. "The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, to give subtlety to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and will increase learning. A man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. To understand a proverb, and the interpretation, the words of the wise and their dark sayings. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." He talks of receiving instruction, hearing good counsel, but in verse 7 he clearly states that the fear of the Lord is where it begins and ends. Fools despise wisdom and instruction, but the wise man fears the Lord and listens to his commandments, heeds his commandments. So we ask, is it really that simple? Is the fear of the Lord really all it takes to be wise? What all does that mean? We know Solomon filled the entire book of Proverbs with practical ways to live life in the fear of God. And a lot of that is written from, as we know, an Old Testament perspective, where God looked much more at works than in the New Testament. But wisdom is mentioned over 40 times through the book of Proverbs. And it's thought that Solomon wrote Proverbs earlier in his life. Ecclesiastes is more towards the end. And Solomon knew where godly wisdom could be found. But like so many, he let his own wisdom push God's wisdom aside as he grew more self-important towards the end of his life. And if we were to read the rest of the book of Ecclesiastes, we would find a gradual shift in Solomon's attitude. He starts off with a very cynical, very depressing attitude, and if it kind of gradually shifts through the book, and if we skip ahead to the last chapter, Ecclesiastes 12, verses 9 through the end, "And moreover, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge. Yea, he gave good heed and sought out and set in order many proverbs. The preacher sought to find out acceptable words, and that which was written was upright, even words of truth. The words of the wise are as goads, as nails fastened by the masters of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd. And further, by these, my son, be admonished, of making of many books there is no end, and much study is the weariness of the flesh. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work unto judgment, and every secret thing, whether it is good or whether it is evil. So Solomon ended up back where he started again, realizing that fearing God and obeying his word is the wisest thing a person can do, because in the end, God will judge according to his standards and not according to ours. So as we look at Solomon's life and man's wisdom, as we see displayed in at least part of his life, we notice how close it sometimes does resemble God's wisdom. Sometimes it seems like man's wisdom and God's wisdom almost overlap. And I think Satan would like us to give up the best for the good. He would like us to say, well, man's wisdom is good enough. We don't need God's wisdom. Let's be careful that when we search for wisdom in our daily lives, that we aren't settling just for man's good wisdom, but that we are seeking God's best wisdom. With these thoughts, let's kneel for prayer. Father in heaven, we thank you that you are the only source of true wisdom. We make it so difficult sometimes, and yet your word says that simply fearing you, obeying your commandments, are really all that we need to truly become wise. Help us to remember this simple truth the next time we find ourselves facing difficult situations or choices, to look to you. Help us to remember that wisdom from you cannot come without a knowledge of you as well. Give us a desire to increase that knowledge. The more we understand you, the more we can become like you. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.